right, moving on with our position previews. Going to kind of a throwaway position, starting pitcher. Not that big of a deal, right? Whatever.
Not at all. Yeah. It's only half the game.
Yeah, no big deal.
A third at best.
It's probably a third of the game.
Yeah, we'll do relief pitchers next week. This is starting pitchers part one. Focus on the early round guys and some overall strategy. Part two will be tomorrow. We'll look deeper into ADP and more late round steals and stuff like that. But also today, best way to construct your pitching staff. Yeah. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
I was just cheering.
Oh, it was you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't me. I haven't said it. Thank you, Adam. Hello. Hi.
I wasn't interrupting you. I was encouraging you.
Chris Towers here.
You seem like you need some encouragement this morning.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah. I was looking at some of my past pitching staffs that I had drafted and realized I'm not sure.
So it does sound like you need some encouragement.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure I love any of them, so maybe I do need encouragement. But, okay. Anyway, look, next week, we'll talk. Think about fantasy baseball. There are so many players. You just can't get to all of them. So I hope you've been reading Scott's spring training buzz stories. Like, they're all about Mitch Haniger, basically. But also Peter O'Brien, Greg Bird. There's some Keon Broxton buzz out there. So, yeah, we'll talk about that more next week. Let's do starting pitchers here. And what I want to know first, you look at the top two pitchers, Kershaw and Scherzer. Kershaw coming off the back injury last year. Scherzer is making progress and hoping to go back to his original grip on his fastball next week. We're recording this on March 2nd, by the way. But right now, changing the grip on his fastball because of his knuckle injury. How much do the injuries to Kershaw and Scherzer, or the injury concerns maybe, affect starting pitcher?
The position as a whole? Yeah. I don't know that it does for me. Like, they are slightly more risky. I still like Kershaw around the 1-2 turn. I've dropped Scherzer down closer to the 2-3 turn, but it doesn't change how I feel about the rest of the position.
Yeah, it just kind of pushes those back. They're actually still my 1 and 2, and I'm encouraged. This is the first I've heard that Scherzer is planning to go back to the old grip very soon. I guess just a new grip to get the arm, get the blood pumping through the arm.
He's hoping.
You know?
He's hoping. He wants to see how he feels soon, and then hopefully he can change back to the old grip. And we can put this behind
us. I do wonder if by the end of the season, we're not going to look back and feel really dumb about not downgrading them even further, given the inherent risk of starting pitchers to begin with. Going into the season, knowing that someone's got a back injury, the other guy, Scherzer's injury doesn't sound serious, but pitching injuries have a way of becoming more serious than you initially think anyway. So it's something that I've been grappling with of there's Kershaw in particular is so clearly better than everyone else when he's healthy that it might be worth it, but I don't know.
I don't want to draft Kershaw. I feel like by dropping him to 11th or 12th, I've basically assured that I won't. But if without the back stuff, I was like, because you were saying he's such a standout at the position and so consistently that I was actually at a place last July where I was thinking about calling him my number one overall player following season, but then the back came up, so now he's barely a first rounder for me, and I'd just rather not deal with it.
Yeah, well, Kershaw, he was 115 more. He was 115 fantasy points better than the number one hitter in 2015 when he threw 232 and 2/3 innings, or right around there. If he had thrown the same amount of innings last year, based on Kershaw's production, which was unbelievable, 169 ERA, .725 WHIP, he would have been 141 points better than the number one hitter, and 86 points better than Max Scherzer. So Kershaw is on another level.
And I feel like the way he stands out is even more palpable in Roto, actually, because he is like he's the only pitcher you expect to have a sub-2 ERA. And the ratio stats he excels by so much, you get to take advantage of that in Roto in a way you don't in points.
Yeah, on a per inning basis last year, he was probably the best pitcher we've seen since Pedro Martinez at his peak.
Well, so then let me ask you this. I mean, look, he came back after the back injury. He pitched into the postseason. He says he feels fine now. Why such a downgrade of 10 picks or so in the draft?
Well, I never would have taken him with a first overall pick anyway. I haven't downgraded him near that much. But I've probably downgraded him 4 or 5 spots. He's still my number one pitcher, so I don't know that I feel like it's really that much of a downgrade. It's just pitchers are scary. And
well, for me, back injuries are scary, yeah. Specifically. Like, just everybody I've known with back problems says they never go away. And so it's, I mean, I know Todd Helton was a completely changed player because of back problems. Kershaw may be fine, but just because I've seen him pitch since then, you know, we haven't seen him handle the workload he was handling before then. We haven't, his strikeout rate wasn't quite the same. Tiny sample size, maybe nothing to it, but there's reason to wonder if he's quite the same.
Okay. So would you take Bryce Harper or Clayton Kershaw?
I still have Kershaw ahead.
I have Harper ahead.
Harper.
All right, guys. What is your elite tier of starting pitchers this year? Give me your elite starting pitchers.
Well, funny you should say that, Adam. I have my tiers open here.
Good.
My elite tier consists of these names. Kershaw, Scherzer, Bumgarner, Sale, Kluber, Verlander, Lester, Syndergaard, Arrieta, and David Price.
Oh.
They are all perennial Cy Young contenders in my mind, and I would be confident with any as my ace.
Okay, that's 10 for you, right?
Yes, and I'll add an 11th in points league, specifically Johnny Cueto.
Okay, Heath or Chris, whoever wants to go next, give me your elite starting pitchers.
Yeah, I probably don't go quite as deep. I think there's a little bit of a drop-off after. It's really tough. Clayton Kershaw, Scherzer, Bumgarner, Sale, Kluber, and then after that, I think there's a maybe Syndergaard is next.
See, I'll include Arrieta, Price, and Syndergaard. And really, I don't necessarily disagree with including Cueto and Lester, but they're borderline for me in that first tier.
Is Price elite in Roto? Because I get it, like the innings are so important. He threw 230 innings last year. In 2015, he threw 220 and a third. But David Price had a 3.99 ERA. I'm sure we expect him to get better, but his fastball velocity was down last year. He's pitching in Boston, and like you look at the ERA, first seven starts, Price had a 6.75 ERA, and then he made an adjustment to his delivery. And then last 28 starts of the season, probably more accurate to judge Price on, he had a 3.39 ERA, which that's not elite. I don't know if you expected.
Well,
but he last. 2015, he led the AL with a 2.45 ERA.
Yeah.
I think a 3.3 ERA, if you're telling, I think he's as likely as anyone to win 20 games. He's as likely as anyone to strike out 200 batters. And so if you give me 15 to 20 wins and 200 plus strikeouts with a 3.3 ERA, that belongs in the first tier.
It's also like the ERA, we're all pretty confident Max Scherzer as the number two starting pitcher. He's never had an ERA below 2.79. You know, he's never been like the elite ERA guy. Yeah, so if we're going to downgrade David Price for that, well, Max Scherzer's going 30 spots ahead of
but
him.
But Scherzer's not a 3.30 ERA guy. And Bumgarner, by the way, hasn't been below 2.70, I don't think.
Yeah.
Or never.
That's not really going to happen
before.
Very much anymore.
That's why Kershaw stands out so much in that category.
I know.
It depends. Like, do we think the league landscape changed that much?
I don't think it changed as much as it did as far as the home run goes, but like a 3 ERA is elite.
I would say also, and this is kind of why I've changed my approach to starting pitcher the last couple years, and I am more willing to pay for an ace. I think the change in hitting landscape has affected, like, the ace tier is pretty much disaffected by it. They've gotten more dominant even as the mid-range to lower-end pitchers have gotten beat up on more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right, and we need to talk about that. By the way, our email address, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Have not been reading a lot of emails. I apologize for that, but that will change beginning next week, just once we get done with the position previews. I've been responding to some emails, so you know, from time to time you can get a written response. And we'll try to read some more, certainly beginning next week. Next week is Bold Prediction Week, so you can email us with a bold prediction. Just put bold prediction in the subject line, and I'll read one to start every show next week. All right, so fill in the blank. I want to draft blank of my top blank starting pitchers.
I want to draft 3 of my top 25 starting pitchers.
Ooh, okay. And 25 for Scott White would be Julio Teheran.
Oh, really? Who's 24?
Matt Harvey.
Okay, three of my top 24 starting pitchers.
Okay. Chris Heath? Creath?
Yeah, I guess what I would say is I definitely want to have two of my top 20, and I'd like to have four of my top 36.
Okay. And 20 for Heath is Danny Salazar, and 36 for Heath, he wants four, up to James Paxton. Chris Towers?
I'm going to kind of go the opposite direction. The way my drafts go, I want to draft zero of my top 12.
Chris Towers is trying to rewrite the book on drafting starting pitching.
I never find myself wanting to reach for them. I would guess the earliest starting pitcher I've taken is probably Steven Strasburg, who's my number 13 starting pitcher. So that's the way I'm going.
It's interesting. I think we should talk about this. I know what your argument is. I'll let you make it. But basically, high variance, and you don't want to invest early in it. So, yeah, I want to talk about, and let's go with this. How do you fill out your pitching staff? And I asked you guys to look at a previous draft that you've done and a pitching staff that you put together that you really like. So, Chris, I'm going to let you start.
Yep.
And tell us how you, because I'll be honest with you. I can't see myself doing this. It's way too risky to me. There's not enough innings eaters on your staff, but take it away.
Well, the way I look at it is, yes, there is inherent risk in my strategy, but the way I look at it is the pitching staff that I'm going to show is I drafted one starting pitcher in my top eight, and then I drafted a bunch after that. So that was the one where I got Steven Strasburg in the fifth round. I think that's good value for him.
Wait, top
He's
eight,
a guy
top,
who has the upside to be a top five star.
Chris, you said in your top eight, you mean top eight rounds or top eight in ranking?
First eight rounds, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, because Strasburg is 13th for you. So.
Yes.
Right, you took Strasburg in the fifth round.
Yes, and then I went Edwin Diaz, Lance McCullers, Kenta Maeda, Vince Velasquez, Julio Urias, Garrett Richards, Taijuan Walker, Raisel Iglesias, and Tyson Ross. I look at that and I see four or five guys who I think could be top 15 starting pitchers if everything breaks right.
All right, Let me slow it down and read it again. Strasburg in round five, then Edwin Diaz. This was a head-to-head categories draft.
Yeah.
Edwin Diaz in round eight. Lance McCullers round nine. And what you're going to see here is three starting pitchers in the next four rounds because he only has one through eight rounds. So Strasburg, then Edwin Diaz, then it's McCullers in round 9, Maeda in round 10, Velasquez in round 12. Okay, and then another starting pitcher, Julio Urias. So four of your next five picks. Garrett Richards, yeah. Taijuan Walker, Tyson Ross, your last pick, and you have Raisel Iglesias.
Yeah, and I just look at it. There's a ton of variance in that pitching staff. I think we saw it with Lance McCullers and Vince Velasquez in particular last season. Things can go really poorly for them. Velasquez ran out of steam, gave up, I think, 13 home runs in his last six starts or something crazy like that. Lance McCullers, the elbow is a bit of a concern, but I look at it and I see Steven Strasburg as a guy who could challenge for the top three at starting pitcher. McCullers, Maeda, Vince Velasquez all have the stuff, the swinging strike rates, to vault the strikeout rates into that top 15 range. Julio Urias could be an ace, maybe not this year, but on a per inning basis could be really good. I prefer going with the more risky guys later on in the draft just because I think starting pitching is such a crapshoot anyway.
All right, look, I'm not trying to disrespect. I appreciate the boldness, but I cannot see that being a winning team. With that pitching staff, you need everything to break right.
It is asking a lot of it is asking for luck to go in your favor. It's depending on luck.
It'll work a lot better in a head-to-head categories than it would in a head-to-head.
That specific.
Yeah, it helps. And even in a roto league, because roto league, you need the innings eaters to have the strikeout totals you want. And obviously, if they're eating innings, they're pitching deeper into games, they're getting more wins too. The categories league is probably the one where you can pull off mixing and matching a bunch of start-by-start guys who aren't going to get as many innings. But it's still... I drafted pitching this way for 15 years, and it worked for about 13 or 14 of those years. And then there came a point where the dynamic changed, and there became so many sure things at the top of the starting pitcher position that it just came, it became too hard to compete with all the other teams who had two or perhaps even more ace level pitchers when I had zero. And, you know, even the breakouts weren't really competing in terms of innings. And it just, I had a bad year. It may have been 2014, 2013. I can't remember exactly, but basically half my leagues, I wasn't even really in contention. And, that's when I reassessed my approach to pitching, because that seemed to be where people were getting the advantage over me. And since changing it, I think I've gotten back on track.
All right. So, Scott, let's talk about your strategy. You said you want three of your top 24, and you were able to do that in this head-to-head points league that you're going to talk about. Now, luckily, one of those, one of those in your top 24, you got in the ninth round, and he's going 34th. So we'll talk about that in a second, but let's look at how you, in this head-to-head points league, 12 teams, filled out your pitching staff, and yeah, go ahead and discuss.
Okay, so I'll just read it off first, I guess. I got Corey Kluber in round 3, Kyle Hendricks in round 6, Matt Harvey in round 9. I've had other drafts where I've gotten my top 3 starting pitchers as early as round 6 or 7. In this one, round 9, it allowed me to get a more complete starting lineup, so I like the way that worked. But obviously, it takes having some faith in Matt Harvey and his recovery from this injury. I did a lot of research on it last week. It made me more optimistic than ever. The pitchers who had this surgery, I couldn't find a single case of a pitcher who had thoracic outlet surgery, and that either the surgery or the injury that led to the surgery was what definitively ruined them. And in most cases, they became much better afterward. So I have confidence that Harvey's going to be able to bounce back from this, and he may not get the innings total he's used to, but he'll be dominant. Sean Manaea as my fourth starting pitcher in round 12, Jose Urias in round 14, then bench pitchers Ian Kennedy, Tyler Glasnow, and Brandon Finnegan late. Two of those I think have a lot of upside. So it really. Like Sean Manaea and James Paxton are guys I'm drafting a lot. Paxton didn't make it on this team, but Sean Manaea and Paxton are my favorite mid-round pitchers. I like getting them as my fourth or fifth starters because I think they could maybe perform more like number threes or number twos. But really, I want those three guys who I trust to perform like top of the rotation pitchers, eat a lot of innings, be in a position to win a lot of games.
I guess I'm not sure why Corey Kluber, Kyle Hendricks, Matt Harvey is any more trustworthy than Steven Strasburg, Lance McCullers, and Kenta Maeda.
You're not? Like, I mean, Kenta Steven Maeda, Strasburg, you keep saying he could be a top three pitcher. He's only once been anywhere close to
sure,
that.
Sure, but like Kenta Maeda and Kyle Hendricks are pretty, I think they're pretty comparable.
Yes.
No.
I don't think Matt Harvey's any less risky or any more. I think he's a lot more risky than Lance McCullers.
Yes, I think.
Just because the last time
true.
We saw them.
I mean, Lance McCullers.
The last time we saw them,
had an elbow sprain.
But he was still good when he pitched.
And
Harvey was awful.
Yeah, Harvey was
5 per 9 innings.
And he had a 3.23 ERA and struck out like 14 per 9.
I like Lance McCullers too, but we can't.
Matt
say
Harvey
he's
was terrible
good,
last year.
For good reason. I mean, he's also twice been in the Cy Young running. Twice.
Sure.
Which is more than Strasburg.
What
has.
You're saying is that he's going to be good this year because he was terrible last year because he was hurt.
Guys, yes. Look, guys rebound from injuries. I mean, this is like.
They do rebound from injuries.
He's risky.
Take a side in this
right,
argument.
But
Chris is, the difference is I feel better that Scott has one reliable ace in Corey Kluber.
Sure.
That's what you are missing. That's the only reason, though, that Scott's top three is more reliable than Chris's top three.
And I would add that, and
but
I know
you invested
this, I know
a lot
opinions
more.
Could vary on this, but I think general baseball fan would say Hendricks is reliable too.
He's reliable. He's just maybe not reliably a top 20 pitcher. He's maybe reliably a number three starter.
If he takes if he continues the innings progression, I think his ERA, if it rises a run, he'll still be.
Why
top
would
20
we
pitcher.
Expect Kenta Maeda to make an innings progression?
He did. Yeah, he did say. I've kind of changed my stance on Maeda a little recently because he said he was aiming for 200 innings.
Like you invested
year.
Third,
just,
sixth, and ninth round picks.
Mm-hmm.
I invested fifth, ninth, and tenth.
But like, there is no way. I just can't see. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm just trying to have a discussion here. I cannot see, Chris, your pitching staff of Strasburg, McCullers, Maeda, Velasquez, Urias, Richards, Walker, Tyson Ross. I can't see it winning. It's just too... There are too many question marks. Many things have to go
it
right.
It needs a lot to go right. I'm going to have to pick up somebody on the waiver wire. The good news is there's always going to be impact pitchers on the waiver
wire.
Wasn't last year.
Right off the top of my head, you've got Danny Duffy, Matt Shoemaker, and James Paxton.
Danny Duffy was really an impact
pitcher.
Matt Shoemaker was phenomenal. No, he was phenomenal for the last 25 starts of the season.
And he didn't win games either, by the way. If only he could get more out of these strikeouts. And then eventually the strikeouts stopped. So it wasn't really that big of a find.
He was really, really good. I don't understand this.
But Paxton wasn't. I mean, Paxton was good, and then he was bad.
Vince Velasquez was someone who was really good for a pretty solid stretch who wasn't being drafted.
A month, and he was being drafted.
Yeah, he was. I drafted him in our head-to-head categories league, and that's the thing about Velasquez. Like, did Velasquez show us signs that he could be a good pitcher? Sure. But he didn't really put it together in fantasy. He had that great start against the Padres, but he went 5 innings a lot of times. He didn't give you the quality starts.
Right, that's why I'm not drafting him in the 6th round. I drafted him in the 12th.
But there are not that many reliable starting pitchers, and you don't have one. You know, so it's so Heath, let's go to Heath and let's pivot to
this
you.
This is
and
the
your
perfect
strategy.
Mixture of the two approaches. I am the voice of reason here. What you need is a good combination of upside and safety without spending too many resources. And so this is not my typical approach, but the more I looked at this rotation, I think if I would have done one thing differently, it would have been near perfect. So I got Cole Hamels in the 5th round to start mine as my ace, and then did not take a pitcher in the 6th, but then took a pitcher in 4 of the next 5 rounds. And I think I got a good mixture of both upside and security with some pitchers that Chris took. Gerrit Cole in the 7th.
Love it.
Jose Quintana in the 8th. Mm-hmm. Kenta Maeda in the 9th. Lance McCullers in the 11th. And then I've got Blake Snell and Trevor Bauer on my bench.
Right. So that's like Chris's approach, but
with Cole Hamels.
With Cole Hamels, but you know, Hamels and Strasburg are fairly similar, right? But
they're similar in that they're a little bit hard to predict. They're very different in how they get there.
They're polar opposites.
No. They're different pitchers, but they're going in the same range. And Heath, I think the difference is you just didn't wait as long as Chris. You took a little bit more security than Chris did.
Well, and I took the upside pitchers in Maeda and McCullers that Chris took. And I think Gerrit Cole falls in that same category that he could be a top 15 pitcher and he might suck again.
Oh, he was top 10 2 years ago.
But I think the one thing that really helps is Jose Quintana. I don't have any illusions about Quintana making the leap into being a top 10 or 15 pitcher, but I feel very confident in him giving me 200 innings of a mid-3 ERA.
He's been the same guy for, 4 years now?
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's the thing. If Scott says he wants to get 3 of his top 24, now he did with that Matt Harvey pick, but again, he likes Harvey more than the industry does.
And let me, because I understand a lot of people are just going to be scared of Harvey. The third pitcher I've gotten most often is Porcello in round 7. And I probably, if Porcello is hanging out there in round 7, I probably would have taken him in this draft too, just because I don't know that I can count on getting Matt Harvey in round 9. But the idea is yes, 3 of the top 24. With one of them hopefully being, at least one of them being top 12.
Okay, and I had a pitching staff in a head-to-head league. I don't know if it was points or categories. It was points. And I took David Price in round 4, Jacob DeGrom in round 5. There's a lot of risk on this team, but Price, DeGrom, Salazar in round 8. So that's 3. I also want 3
Great
starting
pick.
You like that, Salazar in 8?
Great pick, yes.
I want 3 guys that I feel pretty comfortable with. And then after that, I took Tanner Roark in round 11, Sonny Gray in round 14, Garrett Richards, Alex Cobb, Jason Hamill, Eduardo Rodriguez. So I'm okay with that. Didn't love the way it finished out, but the first 3, Price, DeGrom, Salazar, I'm pretty much okay with that.
I'm not sure. I might be the only one not on the Garrett Richards train.
I'm off it now.
I'm not on the Garrett Richards train, except that in the, I think 17th round was where I got him in that one.
Yeah.
I got him in the 16th.
You reach a point where there's just 15th round. 180 spots into the draft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the game changer for me was the hard cutoff at 100 pitches. Like, if he can't exceed 100 pitches ever, I'm not sure he can get more than 10, 12 quality starts over the year, even if he's good. I'm just not sure that's going to be valuable.
It's a good point. It's a good point. All right, listen, I've got great news for everybody. I'm about to save you $20 because buying tickets to sporting events and concerts can be way too complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek, okay? Write that down and download the SeatGeek app right now. Use our offer code FANTASY. I'm going to tell you more about that in a second. So back in the day, if I wanted to go to a game or a concert, I'm searching like 5 websites. I honestly used to use Craigslist. It was a real pain, but now I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. So you type in an event, SeatGeek says, here are the tickets from multiple sources, here are your best options, your best bargains and deals. You sit back and relax, we got this, we did the work for you. And best of all, as I mentioned, our listeners are getting $20 off, a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So to get that $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. The promo code is FANTASY. It's all caps, FANTASY. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code FANTASY. Most likely to be a bust from...
Wait. We've got big news.
Oh, really?
Very relevant.
Now, you may have already said this earlier in the podcast.
Oh, probably.
Wait, are we talking about the same thing?
Exact same thing. Go ahead.
Okay. David Price is having an MRI on his left elbow. We'll get a second opinion from Dr. James Andrews.
So Pete Abraham from the Globe says he had an MRI.
John Farrell said the elbow soreness is more than in the past, and they are concerned. So there might be one fewer.
And he's not waiting to see Dr. Andrews. He's going to meet him at the NFL Combine.
Well, really?
So this evergreen podcast is ruined, basically, because either this is going to be fine and they're like, what are these guys talking about? Or David Price is definitively not an ace, like we just said he was.
No, and all of a sudden I don't like that pitching staff I just drafted with Price in the fourth round.
Yeah, I'm going to take him out of my elite tier.
All right. Well, look.
It's a good thing I never put him in there.
As you guys can hear, this is just new to us now. So let's move on and we'll address it when we get to average draft position. Most likely to be a bust of the top 5 pitchers: Kershaw, Scherzer, Bumgarner, Sale, Kluber.
I think gotta say Kershaw.
Yeah, Kershaw or Scherzer, just because they're already dealing with the injuries. But Chris Sale kind of has some bust potential for me in the same way David Price did, ended up having last year, just with the change in home park, being a lefty, pitching at Fenway.
Giving up fly balls.
We see what Fenway did for guys like Jackie Bradley or Mookie Betts last year. They just ended up getting a bunch of cheap homers because that's that kind of park. So I'll throw Chris Sale out there too.
I don't worry as much about him because Chicago is actually a better park for right-handed home run hitters than Boston is.
Okay.
So he's dealt with it his whole career. I'm going to go Scherzer. Kershaw's a fine pick too.
All right, but we're not predicting that they're busts. It's just more likely.
Nope.
I actually think I can make a bust case for all of them. Like Bumgarner's velocity's down a little bit. You know, Kluber pitched on 3 days rest 3 times in the postseason.
Yeah, through a lot of innings. Has been someone who underperforms his peripherals pretty consistently as well.
And I want to say that John Lester is the safest pitcher. But he also threw a lot of innings last year in the postseason. The good news is he didn't throw that many in the regular season.
Yeah, he just always throws a lot of innings. He's actually like the most consistent of the like over 30 starting pitchers, I think.
Dude, John Lester has had in the last 3 seasons, he has had one bad month. He had a 6.23 ERA in 2015 in April, and he had a 2.99 the rest of the way. Last year it was 2.44. In 2014, it was 246. So Lester, like, I wouldn't mind skipping that whole group of aces and taking Lester as my first. How do you feel about that?
I don't mind it.
I think that's fine. He's kind of the what he is to aces, what Anthony Rizzo is to first rounders, in that he may not actually quite.
You think he's going to be the second best ace this year?
As some of the aces, but Like, you just don't have to worry about him. Like, you draft him, he's not going to be the reason you lose.
200-plus right. innings in 7 of his 8 full seasons, 191 in the one other one because he missed, like, 2 starts. He's pretty good.
Yeah, very good, John Lester. Okay, next question. Most likely to return to form, Zach Greinke, Dallas Keuchel, Sonny Gray.
Can we get a... This is interesting, I think, because can we get a clarification
Zach
on
Greinke's
what...
Zach Greinke's not going to have, like, a 150 ERA.
What is Zach Greinke's form?
All right, like, not his Cy Young season. No, did he win it? He did win the Cy Young, right?
So a mid-3 ERA with 200 innings?
No.
Last year, he was being drafted in the 3rd or 4th round.
Okay.
He has a 342 career ERA.
Okay, no, but look at his ERA in the National League. It's been, like, sub-3 every year, right, Zach Greinke?
With Milwaukee, he was mid-3s.
What about, like, with the okay, his ERA before last year, 263, 271, 166. So, great pitcher, and then it was 437.
He will not return to that.
He will not return to a 271 ERA, is that correct?
All right.
No chance. What's Dallas Keuchel?
Let's not get bogged down in specifics here. You know what Adam's saying?
He had
a certain comfort level with Zach Greinke before last year. Will he get back to that same comfort
year?
Level?
1 year, and it's just no chance?
He's not going back to
3 years in a row, and all of a sudden it's just done?
No. He's not in L.A. He's pitching in Arizona. That's a much worse environment.
Sure.
His career ERA is 3.4. I'm not saying no chance.
No chance.
Can he be a poor man's Johnny Cueto? Chance. That's what he used to be.
I think he could be a top 25 pitcher.
I think he could be more than that because innings are going to help him stand out even if his ERA is above 3.25. But, I think he probably does have the best chance of those three.
Yeah.
I think Dallas Keuchel has a pretty good chance too. I think they all three have a pretty good chance, but that's kind of the order I'd be willing to gamble on that chance.
Like I think his chances are better of getting back to a 2.7 ERA than Dallas Keuchel's are of throwing 230 innings of 2.4 ERA.
Well, not expecting 2.4 ERA. I just, best chance of going back to being a must-start pitcher.
Because I think Keuchel in particular is the most interesting. He has 2 years of being awful and 2 years of being outstanding.
Well, Keuchel, like I said on yesterday's podcast, this is his quote. From the get-go, coming into spring training, it wasn't right, but I was telling myself I could push through it and get through it, but that wasn't the case. And that was his shoulder inflammation that he pitched through basically the entire year. And Keuchel,
it's kind of like Harvey for me.
Yeah, it's fine. It's your approach to injuries. Chris is saying he was hurt last year, and I'm not going to say, and Chris is going to say, that doesn't mean he's going to be healthy this year. I take a more optimistic approach, but whatever it is, I think the injuries are the main reason Keuchel struggled last year, not that he's not good. So I'm encouraged and willing to take Keuchel, what do you think, round 9 or so for Keuchel?
Yeah, he could be, he's one of those in my top 24 that I'd like to take as my third starting pitcher, probably in about that range. I would have taken him ahead of Harvey if I had the chance.
Okay, and when I say rounds based on a 12-team league, and Sonny Gray just goes really late, so you get to a point. Let me see where his average draft position is.
Sonny Gray 52nd. And Jordan Zimmermann both. Mm. Like, they've gone from being consistent top 25, that's where we targeted them, to now we just don't want anything to do with them, and I think that's too abrupt in both cases.
Yeah.
Zimmermann had some clear injury issues last year.
And Sonny Gray had a forearm strain that he went on the DL with. He had a trapezius strain last season as well. So we'll see if they can bounce back. You want to do sleepers, breakouts, and busts real quick? How about give me 2 of each? And be a little quicker than usual on this so we can tackle the first set of average draft position. Heath, 2 sleepers.
Let's go with Joe Ross.
Okay.
And Michael Pineda.
Chris is so mad at you for stealing Joe Ross.
He can be mad at me for stealing Joe Ross. I'll just talk about Michael Pineda, and then he can say Joe Ross too, and he can talk about Joe Ross.
You could steal one of your favorite guys too.
Yeah, you could steal one of my favorite guys. I have not yet been convinced that Michael Pineda will just exist as the unluckiest pitcher in baseball.
He's not like, unlucky.
Like, that just does not happen.
He's not unlucky.
That numbers like he is tossing around are the norm.
Okay. I agree. I will be drafting Ricky Nolasco this year as well.
He's just a two-pitch pitcher. That's all it is. He's a two-pitch pitcher. He can't survive like that.
Okay. I don't agree. And I think if, like, you don't strike batters out at the rate that he does if that's your problem?
Oh, no. His slider and his fastball are great, but eventually, you know, he gets hit. But no, look, I mean, look, he's got a changeup. He just has to develop it a little bit. It's sure. Pineda's, I'd take him with a late round pick. I think I like Severino a little bit better, but.
I think him and Robbie Ray are kind of both in that.
Yeah, for sure. Like, Ray, I like Ray more because Ray has only had that problem for 1 year.
Yeah.
You're talking about a pitcher I was going to pick as one of my two sleepers. So now it's ruined. It's ruined.
Well, you can just go next.
Tell us about Robbie Ray, Scott.
Segue to Robbie Ray, who I have in my sleepers column, and I feel kind of bad because you guys may have him in your breakouts column, right? Like there's kind of a tough...
I don't.
Okay. I do.
Heath does. So, sorry about that. But he struck out 218 batters last year, and I could pretty much just end the discussion on him there. But I will say he was extremely unlucky with the BABIP, 352 BABIP. The next highest among qualifiers was 339. He's had control issues in the past, but those got better in the second half. And just with that bat missing potential, I think he could be great. Brandon Finnegan's the other one I'll go with, who is much easier to draft. It seems like I get him in the very last round a lot. He picked up a changeup from Dan Straley toward the end of last year. August 20th is really when he started to incorporate it into his arsenal. It immediately became his best swing and miss pitch. And as you could see, just looking at the numbers over that final seven starts, he was much, much better because he discovered his best pitch. So I think Finnegan has a lot of upside too.
All right, Chris, a couple sleepers.
I'll mention Matt Shoemaker again. 21 starts after he started throwing his splitter about 35-40% of the time. He had a 2.93 ERA with 126 strikeouts and 135 and a third innings, 14% swinging strike rate overall. Turns out if you have one good pitch and you just throw it all the time, it can work out for you. I get that there's some concern that he'll get figured out with that, but he was really good. The other guy, Robert Gsellman, last I saw, his ADP was climbing, but he's still in like the 340 range. I get that there's concerns about him not getting a rotation spot. He came up, and it's the story we've heard every time with these Mets pitchers. He came up, started throwing a slider immediately when he got to the majors. It's a 20% whiff rate pitch. Also had a 2 mile per hour jump in his velocity. The minor league numbers are really mediocre for Robert Gsellman, but there are a lot of signs that he is going to be. I think he can be the next Jacob DeGrom.
They were for Jacob DeGrom too, the minor league numbers.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I think that's kind of Jacob
more
DeGrom's
than slider.
Jacob DeGrom's velocity spike came a little earlier. His came a couple of years before he made the majors.
Yeah.
Whereas Robert Gsellman's mostly came last season, and if he can sustain that along with the Werth and slider, which he really didn't throw in the minors, and all of a sudden he gets up to the majors and he's getting 20-22% whiff rate with it.
So we should expect first half dominance and then trade him before his elbow gets hurt.
If you have to, if the cost is the very last pick in your draft, you don't even have to draft trade him.
And
like he's going to be a value no matter what.
Do breakouts, Chris? Two breakouts.
That's always
Robert Gsellman.
He's not prepared.
Lance McCullers and let's go with Steven Matz.
Okay. Okay, yeah, Matt's also dealt with injuries last year, but he got off to a great start. I don't know if you remember, he actually gave up 7 earned runs in his inning and 2/3 in the season debut. And then for Matz over his next 7 starts, he had a 1.13 ERA, a strikeout rating. He was ridiculous, but I was a little up and down after that and had a shoulder impingement that ended his season and surgery for bone spurs in his elbow. Steven Matz.
Yeah. Definitely a concern with the injuries as it is with every single person in the Mets staff, except for Robert Gsellman, maybe. But I think he's got ace potential. His minor league numbers were actually better than every single other pitcher that has come up for the Mets and become an ace. So I think he's got ace potential. And McCullers is just, the swing strike rate is insane. It might not be sustainable, the fact that he throws a curveball 50% of the time, but it's one of the best pitches in baseball.
Do you prefer Matt Harvey or Steven Matz?
I have Harvey a little higher, but it's much more likely that I will be drafting Steven Matz.
I have Matz ranked higher.
Heath, who are two? I know Scott has Harvey higher. Heath, who are two breakouts for you?
Oh, and I'm not going to do it to you. I know who you were going to pick, so I'm not. I thought I was going to have to wait for Scott to pick, and then I wouldn't get to pick mine. But I'll go with Blake Snell because I know Scott won't pick him, and Carlos Rodon. Okay. I like left-handed young strikeout pitchers that just need to figure out their control to be elite.
And Rodon has taken steps toward doing that. 2.9 walks per nine last year. It was 4.6 the year before. And in his last 11 starts, Rodon walked 20 batters, struck out 70 in 66 and two-thirds. Unfortunately, only pitched more than six innings only three times. But
see, the thing is, I think I have Rodon ranked higher, and I have higher expectations for him because of what he showed us in the second half. But I think there's a better chance that Blake Snell is all of a sudden a top 15 pitcher than Rodon, because Snell, without figuring out the control, was better than Rodon.
All right, I got to challenge you on this, because if you look at the game log for Blake Snell, it's quite underwhelming. I mean, there were times he's going like three innings because he throws so many pitches. He barely ever made it past five, I think.
He's a rookie pitcher in his first season in the major leagues.
But then, like, I don't think he had a 1.62 whip. I don't think even 3.54 ERA, I can't say that he was good, Blake Snell. You know, he had moments, but he didn't pitch seven innings in any start.
You know what? If you're a rookie pitcher that strikes out more than a batter per inning with an ERA under four, I'm pretty excited about you.
All right. I mean, we did talk about this last time we brought up Blake Snell.
And his FIP was 3.39. I mean, it's not like he was lucky to have a low ERA.
Yeah, I think it's a perfectly reasonable take Heath has here. It's just there's so many upside pitchers that Blake Snell, because of the concerns Adam's breaking up, doesn't stand out to me. But I understand why Heath is excited about him, and I think the general point he's making is valid.
Okay. I know he's obviously an elite prospect. So, Scott, two breakouts for you.
Yeah, so, honestly, Rodon and McCullers are both on my list, too. But the two I find myself drafting most often, I alluded to them earlier. Actually mentioned them earlier. Manaea and James Paxton are my favorite two. Paxton, kind of a similar situation to Finnegan. He didn't break out his best pitch until the very end of the season. It was a curveball. It was a pitch that made him a prospect in the first place, and I couldn't understand why he wasn't throwing it. It turns out it's because he changed his whole delivery, dropped the arm angle. That's why he was suddenly able to throw 99, 100 miles per hour. And then he finally figured out how to throw the curveball with it late in the year, and his numbers took off. So, you know, he became an elite control pitcher last year, 1.8 walks per nine, and was, I don't know, I could see him being like the Noah Syndergaard of left-handers with that pitch selection and that velocity and that control. Mm-hmm. Very excited about him. Sean Manaea, I think he was the best of the rookie pitchers last year, and he also, great changeup. Also saw a spike in production late. Think it's his last 14 starts. He had like a sub one whip and a 2.50 ERA. Just really good. I think a lot of room for strikeouts there too. By the way, I want to read the actual line for Finnegan, going back to my sleeper Finnegan from those last seven starts, because it blows me away every time I see it. I think I undersold it. Last seven starts with the changeup added, 1.93 ERA. 11.3 strikeouts per nine innings. So that's why I'm excited about him. And then Paxton and Manaea.
Yeah.
And more of a middle round range, I like those two.
All right, you know what I like, guys? I like my company because, you know, they employ us. That's good. But CBSSports.com, it is absolutely the best place to play fantasy baseball. You need to step up your game if you're not playing on CBS Sports. You won't find a better place to play. No matter how you play, there's a game style for you. So on CBSSports.com, you can start a league with custom rules like we do all the time. You can compete for cash in a prize league. Those are cool. Or create or join a free league with standard scoring. So with CBS Sports, you're going to get the exclusive roster tools and instant access to the latest advice and analysis from Scott, Heath, and Chris and other analysts. Start playing today. Go to CBSSports.com/baseball. CBSSports.com/baseball. Maybe we'll save average draft position just one through whatever for tomorrow. Let's talk about busts. Blank will be a bust this year. Who do you got?
You're up, Scott.
Who wants to go first?
You.
Oh, me.
Okay, well, let's just make Scott mad and go with two guys that Heath and I probably both have on our bust list. Rick Porcello and Kyle Hendricks, I would assume.
Those are just the auto busts. Like, nobody even needs to say them. Everybody knows.
Are you
busts?
Sure, though? Yeah. Because let's look at where they're actually going. Porcello, 22nd overall, going in the 8th round. Hendricks is 17th overall, going in the 6th round.
That's why I don't call them busts, because we're already downgrading them so much. I mean, Porcello was 2nd best in points leagues last year, 5th best in roto, I think it was.
It's worth saying Porcello, I think, is a much more obvious bust candidate than Kyle Hendry.
Yeah, but there are reasons to like what he did, too.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I've got Hendricks 30th and Porcello 32nd, okay. So I think I can still call a bust.
Right, you can.
Yeah. For me, it's just, we've got a long track record of Rick Porcello not being that guy. And some of the changes that made him really good last season, the increase in his called strike rate, the increase in his control.
Yeah, control.
Were things that we saw the previous year, and he was dreadful. He was one of the worst pitchers in baseball.
Didn't he turn it on late, or am I making that up?
What?
Did he get better late, though, Porcello, as his control improved in 2015?
He might have, but I think he ended up with like a 4.70 ERA, so it's pretty hard to...
Heath and Al actually both liked him as a sleeper last year.
Right, because he was being drafted in like the 20th round.
And he thought he drastically underperformed his peripherals.
And he had, for pretty much his entire career.
No, he dropped his walk rate from 2 in 2015 to 1.3. I mean, that's significant improvement. And usually when you get that low, like league-leading low... You don't go back.
This is one of those per nine versus walk percentage things, I think. He did improve pretty dramatically.
Super efficient, ton of innings for the best offense in baseball, maybe.
Right, like, but that's...
He could have a 3.60 ERA and still be a top 25 pitcher.
That's the one season he did that. The season before, he threw 172 innings. He's never been a super...
I'm saying if he sustains the walk improvement,
but he's never been a super efficient pitcher before this.
I think he...
That's why I'm saying. That's why I'm saying it's a long track record that you have to believe he bucked last year for good.
Okay, so all right.
So they're your two busts,
Scott. What do you got?
I'll make Heath mad.
Good.
You want to fire up the Danny Salazar debate again?
Yes, always.
It's been a while since we've had it, actually, so the audience now may not have heard it, not much of it anyway. Danny Salazar, I think, is not such a great pitcher. I think he's homer prone. I think he's walk prone. Good strikeout pitcher, I guess, but if you're only succeeding on one of the three legs of the FIP triangle, the end result is not going to be particularly favorable. And beyond that, the biggest reason he's a bust is just because he's so inefficient and brittle. Like, he's 200 innings is just out of the discussion for Salazar.
Ridiculous.
And I'd be surprised if he
went
even
180. This is a prime example of Scott White's everything that happened before 2016 was fake news, and 2016 is the real world. Danny Salazar never had a walk problem before 2016. He walked 2.5 batters per nine in 2015.
He had an efficiency problem. He didn't throw strikes consistently enough.
He threw 185 innings in 30 starts. If you give him the 33 starts from 2015, he's a 200-inning pitcher, something Scott says isn't even possible to happen. His bad... Like, he was so awful last year, right? He struck out 10.5 batters per nine, struck out more than a batter per nine in 2015, hasn't had an ERA over 4 since 2014. His win total is going to go up.
It is worth noting, that's a kind of like an ERA over 4. He had a 3.87 ERA last season.
Okay.
Like, it's not
Scott's
over 4.
Scott said he's not a good pitcher.
Right.
He's just
not
bad.
It's not over 4, but he had a 374 FIP, a 374 XFIP.
Right. Well, can I just bring
I didn't
up,
say he's not bad. I said he wasn't good.
Can I just bring up something with Salazar? His first 15 starts, Salazar was 10-3 with a 2.22 ERA. He had a lot of walks, though. But he doesn't give
and
up a lot of hits.
And he had a lot of fly balls that I think Heath actually identified before I...
He was a regression candidate.
Yeah, like, there's trouble coming.
Right.
And the trouble came.
But he got hurt. He got hurt, and he had a 7.36 ERA after getting hurt in 10 starts.
Okay.
Yeah, see, I always struggle with the, like, he had the bad results after he got... It's kind of like Aaron Nola.
Yeah, it is.
Like, Aaron Nola had the bad results before he got hurt, Danny Salazar had the bad results after he got hurt. Which one matters more?
I tell you what, let's just forget about that, and let's just say he's a 27-year-old pitcher with a career Sierra of 3.4 that struck out 10 batters per nine over his career.
Yeah.
There's nothing not to like, except for he's had some injury history.
Well, actually, efficiency issues. I mean, this is part of what really changed in my pitcher approach, and I don't think there are too many in the industry who really get behind innings the way I do. I mean, that's apart from strikeouts, innings are the main thing that separate top level pitchers from everybody else, and the way they have such a direct relation to both wins and strikeout total. I mean, strikeout rate's great, but if you don't get innings,
he's no less efficient than Kyle Hendricks.
Innings are also, to a large extent, a result of pitching well, and Rick Porcello might be the best example of this ever. He threw 50 more innings last season than the previous year, almost entirely because he just pitched better. Is that predictable? It'd be great if I knew Rick Porcello was going to throw 220 innings again, but that's mostly, I don't believe he'll throw 220 innings because I don't think he'll pitch that well.
Particularly these days, I think there are certain pitchers that managers just don't let throw that many innings.
Like Kyle Hendricks?
Or Rick Porcello before
maybe,
last year.
But Hendricks, Joe Maddon gave Hendricks a much longer leash in the second half last year. He pitched
everything
more the
went right
low.
For him. He didn't get hurt and he got to 190 innings. Like everything well, possible
but,
went right
but
for
if
him.
He had the most efficient defense
half,
in baseball
if,
history.
If he had been doing his second half innings pace over the full season, he would have gotten well over 200 innings. Like I just think Maddon was being extra careful with him early. And then he earned his trust that he could handle that third time through the lineup. So that
can I throw a hot take bust out there? These have been a little mild. Let's get a little adventurous, guys. Jake Arrieta, still being drafted like an elite pitcher. We all pretty much included him in our elite tier. Had a 4.05 ERA and a 10.1% walk rate after June 1st. This is a guy with basically a season and a half and then a month of elite production in his entire career. He's 31 or 30. Maybe Jake Arrieta's being overdrafted.
He's 30. He'll be 31 in March. Yeah, you know, Arrieta was 13th in points, 11th in Roto last year, and it was a tale of two seasons. He had a 1.74 ERA in his first 15 starts. He looked like Jake Arrieta, but the walks were a little high. And then he had a 4.44 ERA in his last 16 starts, and still a lot of walks, more higher walk rate. But the thing is, it was only walks. I mean, he doesn't give up home runs, and he doesn't give up hits. So it's a big deal. And he had control issues in the past, Arrieta. But yeah, you know, I'm going to throw another guy because talk about both of these guys. Cole Hamels. Cole Hamels had his worst walk rate ever and kind of had bad numbers. A lot of it was late, but not bad. No, that's not fair.
Yeah, he had a low mid threes ERA.
3.32 ERA. 1.31 whip, though. That wasn't good. He was 18th in points, 24th in Roto, Hamels. So between Hamels and Arrieta, you see some control issues there. What do you think?
Well, I think they're too... they both throw a wrench in my Rick Porcello. Once a guy achieves an elite walk rate, he doesn't go back. But that's kind of what makes them both weird cases to me. And Hamels was never really an elite control guy anyway. But Arrieta had 1.9 walks per nine in 2015. And suddenly he was wild. I don't really understand it. I would guess there was something mechanical going on. I would hope there's not something health-related going on. I'm not as high on him as most people. I think he's... where do I have him in my starting pitcher rankings? I do think he's still an ace, but I have him ninth. I think the industry consensus is fifth or sixth, so I'm never drafting him. But there was a year and a half where he was near Clayton Kershaw level, and I'm not willing to... actually, it was more than a year and a half. It was 2 years spread across a three-year period,
right,
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
What
about Hamels? Are you worried that the end is near for Cole Hamels being a reliable fantasy starter? Well, I'll tell you what. Let me phrase it differently, because actually Heath talked about a pitching staff where he did do this. Are you okay with Cole Hamels being your number one starter?
I could live with it, particularly in a more of a categories based format. But I wouldn't love it, and wouldn't be my goal.
Yeah, I know the walk rate was way up. He's still thrown 200 innings for seven straight years and 8 out of 9. He's probably as likely or more likely to throw 200 innings than any of the other pitchers we've talked about.
There were three pitchers as I was doing my research that I decided I probably am not going to draft because two of them I can't really figure out, and one of them would be my bus candidate. My bus candidate would be Aaron Sanchez.
Yeah, he's someone that I wanted to mention. He's in my bus column.
Like,
yep.
95,
like
95 more innings.
This would be your fourth bust, Chris.
Well, there are a lot of pitchers. But Aaron Sanchez, I'm afraid
like
of because he threw about 95 more innings last year than he did in 2015. That is insane. Masahiro Tanaka and Julio Teheran. I don't know how to feel about them.
Yep.
Teheran especially, like, because Teheran struggled in 2015. He had a 4.04 ERA. And last year, the season numbers were pretty good overall, but he had a great stretch in May and June with a 1.64 ERA. And other than that, he was bad. He was over 4 ERA the rest of the season. So basically, it's been like two good months in the last two seasons for Teheran. And Tanaka, like, he's always solid. He just, the strikeouts keep going down. So I'm not sure how to value those guys. And I see bust potential with Teheran.
I like Tanaka as a solid number two. I'd rather have Teheran as number three. There were some things about his year last year that didn't look particularly sustainable. I want to get one of my favorite busts out there. And it's a teammate of Aaron Sanchez, Jay Happ.
Yeah.
There's just no way, no way at all what he did last year is sustainable. 34 years old, and he finally has a good year. And he didn't even do it in the way that we were hoping he was going to. 7.5 strikeouts per nine, 2.7 walks per nine. He had a 4.18 xFIP and a 3.18 ERA.
But don't the Blue Jays pitchers consistently outperform their peripherals?
Well, Marcus Stroman didn't last year.
No, but Estrada and even Sanchez. I mean, he doesn't get a lot of
Sanchez
strikeouts.
Didn't really outperform his peripherals. Estrada did, but he's an interesting case because he's a very unique pitcher in terms of the approach that he has, pitching well over the top, out of his arm slot, so he gets a lot of backspin on the pitches. Those pitchers tend to induce a lot more weak contact.
Okay.
I feel like Jay Happ is kind of what I was saying about Kendricks and Porcello on steroids, though. Not literally on steroids, but that argument on steroids.
You can't say steroids when you talk about baseball.
Like, nobody believes in Happ, so you can get him so late, and it's just like,
he's the 40.
Why not?
He's being drafted as a number four starter. I don't have any interest in him as a number four starter.
What do you mean by he's being drafted
he's
as a number
four starter?
He's
the 44th starting pitcher off the board.
Okay. So
fits the definition.
But that's not very high relative to what he did last year.
Right, but
That's what, the 12th round range? I mean, that's...
He's going before James Paxton, Sean Manaea, Aaron Nola, Vince Velasquez, Carlos Rodon, Sonny Gray. Those are all guys, Robbie Ray, Matt Shoemaker, those are all guys I'd much rather have than
Wow.
Jay Happ.
Taking Robbie Ray over a guy who was a top 15 pitcher last year, Jay Happ, like, that's kind of a leap of faith in a guy, for Robbie Ray,
right,
who had just, other than strikeouts, was terrible.
Well, like, yeah. Jay Happ was just exceptionally lucky.
Okay.
Yeah, it's taken a leap of faith either way. It's, do I buy, like, the physics behind it, or do I buy what I've actually seen? And
well, what I've seen is like a decade of Jay Happ
sucking. Sometimes, like, you could be wrong either way. You could be right either way. It's just like, it's one of those things, like predicting how baseball players perform in the future. We're never going to be that accurate with it.
That's kind of what we're trying to do. It's like our job. It's the purpose of this.
I know, but it's
that we should cut that and make that like an ad.
See, no, that's actually pretty funny.
Just, I mean, let's be reasonable here. We're predicting, like, first of all, if we could really do that with any real success, we wouldn't have this job.
Where are you going?
He's going to Vegas
and winning millions of.
This is the nil
and making millions and like I mean.
Scott, let me jump in.
We should all be fired.
Let me jump in.
No,
Scott is right. I mean, you're going to get a lot wrong. You're going to get a lot right. The skill in drafting in fantasy baseball is managing your risk, because, you know, and taking shots when you're going to take shots, because we can't predict everything, obviously. And if we did, I think Scott is saying we'd be in Vegas making millions of dollars. We're going to end the show on that, but I would like to say, like, I think a big difference in the way we draft, Heath, is you said Masahiro Tanaka would be your number two. To me, like, a guy that's ranked around there, being drafted around there, like, that's gotta be my number three starting pitcher. I need two starting pitchers that are more reliable and have more upside than Tanaka.
Might be my number one.
That's just crazy.
Well, I agree with you, Adam. I agree with you. Yeah. I actually see Tanaka and Teron both as kind of safety net pitchers. If I don't get one of the third of my top 24, I'll take them as either one of them as my third. So, but that's like fallback third for me, not ideal second.
I think the starting pitchers are like the running backs from football.
Yes.
It just hit me. Because, yeah, everybody wants to have a great staff of starting pitchers, but they are not as predictable as hitters are, and they're more of an injury risk than hitters are.
That's why if you invest, I do it the same way with both. I'm going to take a bunch of them, but very rarely early on am I going to take one. If one really good one falls to the right place, I will.
You need to write a zero starting pitcher article. It'll go catch on like wildfire.
Zero SP. All right, guys, that's it for today. Tomorrow, average draft position from start to finish at this position should be very informative. We'll talk about a lot of guys, and we'll talk to you then. For Heath Cummings, Scott White, Chris Towers, I'm Adam Azer. Talk to you Friday.